Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. With unemployment near a record low and more baby boomers retiring, Wisconsin faces a looming worker crisis. Employers from a broad range of industries are reporting finding difficulty finding workers. But the shortage is especially critical with the area of skilled trade. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Wisconsin's 3% unemployment rate in July is near a record low and down from a peak of 9.2% in January 2010. Now, that's well below what economists consider to be full employment, the level at which everyone who is willing and able to work is employed, or about 4 or 5%. New construction has rebounded from recession-era lows, but the trouble is there aren't enough tradespeople to do the work. Joining me today on Route 51 is Mandy Mayock, Mid-State Technical College Apprenticeship Coordinator. Mandy, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So, as you mentioned, I represent Mid-State Technical College. Mm-hmm. Mid-State has campuses in 4 communities in central Wisconsin, including Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, Marshfield, and Adams. And Mid-State serves the diverse and changing educational needs of central Wisconsin communities. We offer a range of opportunities for people in all walks of life, from recent high school grads just beginning their college experience, to those wishing to transfer to a 4-year college or university, to others wanting to change or enhance their careers, and finally for those who depend upon the college for learning in their leisure years. I consider myself really fortunate to be able to coordinate the 13 apprenticeship programs that we offer through Mid-State Technical College, and I'm looking forward to talking more about that.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you're here. Sandy Bishop is also here. Sandy, you are Executive Director of Economic and Community Development at Nicolet College. You're joining us. What does that mean, actually?
Yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here, Shereen. I'm very happy to be here. And Nicolet College is one of the 16 technical colleges in Wisconsin. And so, like Mid-State Technical College, we offer programming really that spans the adult person's lifetime in terms of, you know, job entry, skilled trades training, all the way through learning in retirement. And so I'm very happy to be here as well. Nicolet offers more than 70 degree, diploma, and certificate programs. And maybe unlike some of the other technical colleges, we also have an international studies program, transfer agreements with dozens of 4-year universities, and a comprehensive university transfer and liberal arts program. My role is focused on, as you said, economic and community development, and that really includes 4 key areas, one being business and industry solutions, and in that area we focus primarily on customized instruction and providing technical assistance to businesses in our district in the Northwoods, and helping them be more productive, helping them develop their employees and meet their business objectives. And so that's focused mostly on employed people in our business and industry up north. And additionally, we have a workforce development program that is, I think, one of the areas we're going to be spending some time talking about today, is how do we help meet employer needs for skilled workers in this really difficult situation where we have a number of skills gaps in virtually every industry and not enough workers entering the talent pipeline to meet the needs of even the current job vacancies, not to mention what's predicted to exist within the next several years and in the decade. The other areas of my role include innovation and entrepreneur development, which is one of the strategies Nicolet is undertaking to attract new business, help people get started with businesses, and to expand existing businesses. And we have a lot of small businesses up in the north, and this is a niche for us, I believe, with entrepreneur development. And then a kind of a large area of our college is related to arts, culture, and community engagement. And we have a number of partnerships with organizations and entities that are really building the infrastructure and fabric of the Northwoods in terms of having cultural amenities, recreational opportunities, trying to attract people back who maybe left the Northwoods for a career early on, and to really have the Northwoods be a destination where people want to start their families, engage in careers, and have things to do that make it a place to live, work, and play year-round.
Absolutely. We have a third guest today, too, Derek Heikkinen, the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board's Business Service Director. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. That's a mouthful. Not a lot of people know what it means.
I want to know what it means. Tell me.
So the Workforce Development Board is part of an agency called the Wisconsin Workforce Development Association, so WWDA. That's a sister agency of DWD, to the Department of Workforce Development out of Madison. So together, they align and split the state of Wisconsin up into 11 districts. So we're in District 6, and we are partners, you know, working with the same special populations towards the same common goal. But really, you know, fortunate that we get to work with, because of our district size, all three tech colleges in Mid-State, NTC, and Nicolet. So essentially what I do is I go out and, you know, measure most of the economists for the region. So I do a lot of predictive analytics and measuring data and market trends and making sure that in terms of our structural economics that the businesses that what I'm seeing on paper attributes to the real world and that's what they're really experiencing. So working on that side of the house to kind of get them to understand, you know, where the pools are and the trends are and what they're going to need to do to compete and recruit and where they can save money to recruit more talent. And then through our programming, we work with special populations that are either unemployed, underemployed, meaning they're making less than livable wage or not enough on a part-time basis to qualify for not having to, you know, be on any sort of state assistance or benefits packages, or handle a lot of dislocations. And our ultimate goal is, we do a lot of co-enrollments with the DWD special populations, but the ultimate goal is to get them into subsidized training and in-demand fields that benefit our structural economics through the vehicles at the technical colleges. So it's just providing the support pieces in place and or customized training opportunities to allow more people that are underserved and shift those demographics by getting them to our tech colleges and getting them higher skills that can be productive members of society and enhance our overall economy.
So do you work statewide or is it just a specific number of counties?
9 counties. So Portage, Adams, Wood, Marathon, Lincoln, Langlade, Oneida, Forest, and Vilas County.
So many in our listening area. Okay.
Correct.
So broadly speaking, what's the state of the workforce in Wisconsin, especially the skilled labor workforce? What is the state of it? Are we really in this worker shortage?
Not only are we, if you don't mind me taking this one, but the entire country, let alone the entire globe, is facing it. So we're facing a problem right now with this human capital dilemma. Obviously, we don't have enough people for maximal employment, or industries don't have enough right now. So it's been a huge problem probably for the last 5 years. And then the state of Wisconsin and the United States is predicted to last until about 2035 is when we think we'll have a sustainable margin of human capital to meet the demand based on shifts. But as part of the 2015 study after the census on a statewide basis, we were able to attribute that national economists forecast this could happen in China and the UK through 2050.
Okay.
So, you know, we're all integrated, you know, with technology now. It's kind of a global market, right? So, yeah, it's happening right now. The biggest thing is we've had net loss of family farms since 1984. So that was, large families. People had larger families, similar to the baby boomers coming out. Now the baby boomers are retiring. There's fewer and fewer farms, fewer family sizes. We lost a lot after the recession, so people had to move to other areas, either out of the state or migrate to other portions of the state outside our area to find employment to be able to feed their families and find new opportunities. Then the other issue that we have is it obviously costs more now with childcare and health costs and insurance costs to have children. Cost of living is significantly higher, so people have been having less kids for the last 15 to 20 years in layman's terms. And now millennial and Gen Z kids, they're having kids later in life. And when they do, they're having fewer, more of that work-life balance thing. So what's happening is you have 74.9 million baby boomers retiring nationwide, and you don't have nearly enough people to make up the gap coming out of the K-12 system. So Central Wisconsin as a whole, we're going to face 150,000 roughly retirements in the next 5 to 8 years, close to 50,000 in the next 2 to 3, high-valued assets with primary industry and organizations. So there's not enough coming out, and we really don't see that picking up until the third graders and kindergartners now, like that group, are seniors. So when we're getting hit the hardest by the offset of retirements, we have the fewest number of people coming out of the system. And like you said, 3% unemployment, anytime you hear that number get below 5%, it means full employment, right? Mm-hmm. So what's really left over is people with more barriers. Like there's reasons why they're not mm-hmm. employed right now. So that makes it harder because that takes – it's more investment on our end, right, to get those people trained and skilled. Mm-hmm. And that's less for the business as well. So they got to get creative. And what happens now is it drives inflation, right? Supply-demand shifts. So now businesses have to compete and pay more. So if I was in manufacturing and I wanted to pay somebody an entry-level wage of X and all my neighbors kind of went along with the flow in the same sector, now I can't look at it that way. I have to look at what's everything else in terms of a skill set this person can do and what's all the job opportunities they can have. So now like every industry is competing with each other over this marketplace. So they're competing on benefits. They're competing on work-life balance, talent retention, talent reinvestment, succession planning, trying to be more innovative in terms of culture to grab and retain those people. So they're having to get more creative. Your labor shed used to be 30 miles for employment as early as 3 to 5 years ago. Now it's 60. So I always tell businesses, you got to draw a circle around your business 60 miles and figure out, if I need somebody to do X, Y, Z, where's everywhere else they can go? And then what kind of opportunities do those look like?
So obviously the three of you know one another. You work together on and you must communicate about these changing the changing landscape of the workforce. So specifically, how are the educational components changing in reaction to this changing workforce?
Yes, and I can talk a little bit about what we're experiencing in Nicolet's district, but like Derek just said, this is not a problem that's unique to our college, our region. It's not even a statewide problem. It's national and beyond. And so I think we're all seeing the population changes. Nicolet in particular, our whole district has seen a declining population, and especially with younger people that we would look to traditionally, those students coming out of high school and college, those numbers are down. And so in general, how we have been responding to really the gloomy news that Derek just painted for all of us is by adding more flexibility in our programming. There is an underserved population, I think, that exists throughout Wisconsin in people aged, let's say, 20 to 45. So we would typically think of them as non-traditional students, mm-hmm. But that population is becoming more and more our traditional student, and they generally have at least a part-time or even several part-time jobs, family commitments. They're really bound to a certain place. Our district is quite large. It covers nearly 4,500 square miles, and people have to travel up to 50 miles to get to our campus. Mm-hmm. And so when you're working full-time plus perhaps with trying to string together multiple jobs, dealing with childcare issues, all of the challenges that families are facing, that's why those people aren't really in school. They want to be. They want to increase their skills. They want to be able to apply for higher paying jobs with benefits and such. But there's so many different challenges that it's just hard to get them to access education. And so what all of our colleges are doing is trying to meet them where they are, address those challenges through flexible delivery options, online programming. Nicolet has launched a competency-based education program that I can talk about later on, where we really are giving people credit for what they've done. Either they've attended some education beyond high school or had just some work experience where they have acquired some skills that are very valuable, and helping them document, articulate those skills, and then be able to explain to the next employer how those skills really do relate to the new skills that employers are looking for. And so that whole concept of credit for prior learning, helping people get shorter term, smaller chunks of education when and where they need it, to help them enter a new career or perhaps with their current employers become more highly skilled that can help them with promotional and career advancement opportunities. So the educational system has had to change to meet the current reality.
Okay. Mandy, I will let you answer that question in just a moment. We do need to take a break. You're listening to Mandy Mayock, Sandy Bishop, Derek Heikkinen on Route 51. And when we return, we'll hear more from Mandy, from the rest of the group, and discuss some of the factors that led to this shortage and some efforts underway to tackle the problem. I'm Shereen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Mandy Mayock, Mid-State Technical College Apprenticeship Coordinator. Sandy Bishop, Executive Director of Economic and Community Development at Nicolet College. And Derek Heikkinen, the North Central Wisconsin Workforce Development Board's Business Service Director. They're all with us today as we continue our discussion on the labor shortage in our area. So, Mandy, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the Mid-State program and how your institution is responding to some of these challenges.
Sure. I'd love to talk about that. I'd like to go back to one thing that Derek mentioned in terms of employers needing to be a little bit more creative in terms of their recruitment and retention strategies for workforce, given the shortage. And really, at Mid-State, we're very fortunate to be partnering with a number of businesses who realize that and want to partner with us in coming up with solutions. So interestingly, in times of low unemployment, it's very common for the technical colleges and colleges in general to see trends of declining enrollment. Interestingly, at Mid-State Technical College, we've actually had increased enrollment for the past 2 years. We've seen about a 6% headcount increase in the last couple of years. And I think we really can attribute that to the flexibility of our business partners and their willingness to allow their employees to attend school part-time. They're working, they're in the workforce, and they're attending school part-time. So that's been a wonderful partnership between business and education. We're seeing an incredible increase in apprenticeship as a workforce training strategy. From 2018 to 19, our apprentice training grew by 14%. From 2019 to this year, we've seen a 28% increase. So that is, again, a testament to that partnership between education and business and knowing that we need to work together to come up with solutions to let people into the workforce, but simultaneously train them and upskill them and advance their education.
How are the unions playing a role here?
So unions play a great role in their ability to recruit into the skilled trades. A lot of the local labor unions or all of the local labor unions are part of much larger organizations, national, international level. So they have some resources available that they can devote specifically to recruitment for their skilled trades. So it's great when we can partner with them. We can get into the high schools. We can have speaking engagements where we can talk to people who, like as Derek mentioned, underemployed folks who might be looking for a change in career or some way to advance their skill set. And we can tap into some of those union resources to promote that.
Okay. I have to tell you, I was taking a look at some of the average hourly wage for skilled laborers in Wisconsin, and these surprised me. I was just looking at the ABC of Wisconsin Apprenticeship and Training Trust. They had these figures. Carpenters average $31.78 an hour. Electricians, $31.10 an hour. Heavy equipment operators, $33.06 an hour. Plumbers, $34.04 an hour. These wage rates are significantly higher than salaries for some people with four-year or even advanced degrees. So knowing that, I guess, why do you think so many people gravitate toward four-year degrees instead of these apprenticeship or tech college programs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it started out of the, if you can date it back to the Clinton administration when we had the .com internet website boom, right? We became a lot more technologically advanced as a nation. That created a lot of new jobs, which in theory required people with higher level of education or expertise at the time. Well, what happened is prior to that and since then, not only the United States economy, but also Wisconsin's economy is predominantly a trade-based market in terms of structural economics. So if you take manufacturing in north central Wisconsin, 26.4% of its tax dollars come from the manufacturing sector. Healthcare also has skilled trade-based careers, right? People don't know that nursing is defined as a skilled trade now and taught in CTE courses. That's your next largest market in terms of your tax base. And then transportation and a lot of these other industries are up there as well, construction as well. So a lot of these careers are based off of that. And 67% of the market in terms of what jobs are available in the state of Wisconsin require are those types of jobs, those skilled trades, which basically mimics the United States economy as a whole. I think education got aligned after that shift and didn't really make any adjustments at the K-12 level coming back. So it became this stigma that, oh, in order for what's best for my child, I need to send them to a four-year. When all along, that was kind of just an initial spike for a short period of time. All along, the baseline careers in terms of skilled jobs have remained the same. But what's happened in terms of those wages now is because of the shortage, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they have to be more competitive and pay more. So a lot of those averages that you're talking about are ordinarily what somebody would make over a 5 to 8 year span with an organization. They're now becoming close to the entry wage within the first 1 to 3 years. And now in terms of succession planning, where you can go with that, as Mandy and Sandy both talked about, by going on and adding more skills through something like an apprenticeship or something else to your already skilled trade-based career, your ceiling could be $50 to $60 to $70 an hour depending on who you work for, what you're working in. So I think it's just getting people to understand in terms of where our tax dollars come from and the volume of jobs historically, those are the jobs. And those are the jobs that exist in the state of Wisconsin. If you look on any job site, it doesn't matter if it's Job Center Wisconsin, Indeed, whatever, Monster, whatever you want to use, LinkedIn. If you're looking in central Wisconsin, you just do a search, you're going to see the same things over and over. It's going to be a CDL over-the-road truck driver. It's going to be a welder, a machinist, a maintenance technician, electromechanical specialist, certified medical assistant, a registered nurse. It's going to be somebody with computer programming or data architects. It's going to be plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians. It's not going to be, you know, social media engagement specialist, right? So,
right.
So, I mean, I think it's been a – there's different spikes, right? So during the technological boom of the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, I think that education shifted away due to those things. But those jobs have always been there. They've just been hidden in the background as of late.
Yeah, and I think, too, a mindset change is needed among parents. You know, I just think of my own experience as a parent, and you know, the goal is always to be able to send your child to a four-year college or university right out of high school. And that has been the paradigm for many, many years. And we've seen in high schools particularly a decreased emphasis on technical education. And some high schools have even defunded their programs entirely, while at the same time, the employment demand has remained steady and even increased in terms of skilled trades. And so that has created a huge mismatch, and I think educational institutions, K-12s as well as technical and universities, need to be thinking about our messaging and who are we serving, because it really does a disservice to a young person to encourage them to get a four-year degree that isn't going to help them in the labor market. Now, I know all of the technical colleges have programs and transfer agreements with four-year institutions, and sometimes a person needs to get out in the workforce, figure out what it is they want to do, and look at career development. And many employers, probably most employers, will fund or at least subsidize the funding for their employees to go back to school and earn that advanced degree later on as they need to. So that is a way that helps students to come out of an educational program without this staggering debt that many of the people in our generation and our kids are coming out with.
My oldest son graduated from a 4-year university, went to a really expensive school. He's got a ton of debt. I mean, it's astronomical. And my younger son is interested, after spending a couple of years at Stout, he is interested in a career as an electrician. And he said to me, "Mom, everybody tells you how to go to college. Nobody tells you how to be an electrician. How do I go about that?" I didn't know. I mean, how do you make sure that people know that these career paths are happening? Does that have to start at the high school? Does it have to start earlier?
I think it already did. So 2 years ago, it was 2 years for ACP, correct? About 2 years old. The state implemented academic career planning. So now it's making sure that all your teachers 6th through 12th grade are working with the students to build a plan. So they're putting kids in classes that make sense for not only our economics, but this human capital issue and solving, getting people in the right fields. But now they're promoting more of like, rather than just push the 40 degree side, it's more aligning what's the kid, boy or girl, good at, what classes they excel at, and what do they like to do, and getting to understand the marketplace more. So there's a lot of overlap and bridging that happens. I know I don't want it to seem like we're slamming 40 degrees up
no.
here. They're good, right? But when I graduated high school, you know, 15, 16 years ago, it was, at that time, 40 degree was a little bit better in terms of what I wanted to do, right? Mm-hmm. So now it's kind of changed. I tell kids all the time, provided you took the right classes in high school and you want to go to work right away, you should be in CTE classes, by the way, but provided you took those in high school and you want to go to work right away, or if you're in an in-demand program at the tech college, or if you're going into the right field at a four-year, you have the same unique opportunity now. One's not really better than the other, provided you have the same inherent work-based competencies. Mm-hmm. But the big thing is getting parents to understand. In the state of Wisconsin now, we're closing in on a percentage close to 40% in the next 3 to 5 years. They're estimating 40% of the degrees that you can get from a four-year institution, a student will never outpace your debt. And even if you still have student loan debt when you want to retire, like, it gets garnished from your retirement. That's one thing that never goes away with you. So it's getting kids to understand that. But the big thing is just become aware. I'm not saying that they're bad, but what you need to look at it as, we're always going to need people with business degrees. We're always going to need people, especially now with data science, computer programming, those type of things, engineers, legal, medical, right? We need teachers. They sure. have to go out of the four-year system. It's just, there's not that many jobs for like philosophy mm-hmm. majors or geologists or zoologists. So just like understand the marketplace and be aware that if I go into this field, there's not really a huge market for me. I might have to leave the state of Wisconsin. I think during that 40 degree pitch, another thing that hurt us in this labor shortage is we're the 7th worst state in the country at retaining our 4-year graduates. So we were making this massive push as a state and they were all leaving.
Ah.
So
that's interesting. Since we're talking about school, high schools, can we talk a little bit about the youth apprenticeship programs and how those are being formed and continuing to help fill these shortages? My own daughter went through the youth apprenticeship program here in Wausau, and now she's an RN. So she began in high school as a CNA, got her first CNA job while she was still in high school, and then she ended up getting a job as an RN at the same hospital where she was doing her training. So, I mean, how are your organizations, how are your institutions working with these youth apprenticeship programs to continue them and to shape them around this shortage?
Sure. So your daughter's story is an excellent example of being able to start something in high school that she was able to materialize into a career as an adult. And that's the goal with youth apprenticeship. Ideally, we'd love to be able to bridge that into a registered apprenticeship. There's a lot of emphasis on creating those pathways and the bridge to doing that throughout the state. So I would give an example of in the construction trades. If somebody does a youth apprenticeship in carpentry, let's say, and they do 2 years in high school, they work a certain number of hours. I apologize, I don't have the number of hours, but they do a certain number of work hours. They have to attain certain skills and achieve certain competencies throughout that youth apprenticeship. If they then turn out to become a carpentry apprentice as an adult, they can get credit for all of the hours that they had been working in high school and reduce the amount of time that they spend in their registered apprenticeship. That allows them to gain their skilled credential, their journey worker certification, earlier than they would have otherwise, and allows them to begin to train the next generation of apprentices. So it's a great pathway. It's a great way for folks who are interested and inclined in certain areas to start their path before they actually even leave high school. In some instances, there's an opportunity to bridge right into an adult apprenticeship, or in your daughter's situation, right into a career that she's interested in. So it's a great opportunity.
And I think in addition to the youth apprenticeship programs, we have a lot of dual enrollment programs and partnerships between the colleges and the high school so that students can earn college credit while still in high school. And last year at Nicolet, we had almost 450 students, high school students earn Nicolet credits while they were still in high school. And we have a program called Start College Now and Transcripted Credit Opportunities. And so there was one student that took enough credits and coursework in high school that he was able to come to Nicolet and complete his welding associate's degree in 1 year instead of the typical 2 years. So that really helps as well with reducing college debt. And there's so many opportunities. I think this is another area that parents can educate themselves in and really work in partnership with their son or daughter to take advantage of these opportunities that are available to them in high school.
Okay, we need to take a break. I do want to come back to the apprenticeship idea and talk a lot more about apprenticeships for adults as well. But again, we do need to take a break. You're listening to Mandy Mayock, Sandy Bishop, Derek Heikkinen on Route 51. When we return, we're going to continue this discussion and a look at some specific opportunities for people interested in learning a trade in our area. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Mandy Mayock, Sandy Bishop, and Derek Heikkinen, our guests today, discussing the continued skilled trade labor shortage in Wisconsin. One of the biggest concerns about the skilled labor shortage we're hearing about is that large-scale projects won't be completed on time or at all if there aren't enough skilled workers. Is that a valid concern?
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. Just to touch on, kind of bring that back to the youth apprenticeship discussion we were having.
Yeah.
So I work with a lot of sector business groups. I actually lead I'm the president of the Central Wisconsin Metal Manufacturers Alliance, so that's 75 businesses. But our office also leads various other sector partnerships, right? So one thing that they've been using youth apprenticeship is for recruitment. So in the past, they'd be trying to use that to maybe get one person, right? Now they're kind of treating it as, okay, if I'm looking at the marketplace and that 3% unemployment rate right now, my retention rates aren't anywhere near 10% what they should be with that group because it's more high risk. And I don't know if, you know, certain organizations aren't fully equipped to maybe handle those special populations as others are. So what they're really doing now is, because what's happening or what started happening 2 or 3 years ago was semester one of year one of a tech college program, because they're so high in demand, right, in our area, businesses would go in and say, hey, if you're interested in this field, I'll pay for the rest of your tuition, and then you can come work for me, and we'll work around your schedule. So the people coming out of tech college right now, they've been spoken for the last 1 or 2 years for their two-year programs. So now what they're doing as for a competitive market is they're going in the high schools and treating youth apprenticeship like a college football program recruits high school athletes. So let's take on 5, 6, 7. Let's treat it as a mentorship. Let's make them feel at home, find out what they really like to do, and then the ones that we think could stay here and they could see themselves interested in staying here, we'll let them work here after after high school. If they want to come back and go the 4 year, we'll have them do internships or summer jobs here, but at least we have our tentacles into them. Or we'll put them in a youth apprenticeship and transition them either to an RA or reinvest them to go back to local tech colleges to stay here. Now it's becoming a trend. If you're in an in-demand field for a youth apprenticeship and you're a student or a parent listening to this, your child's probably not going to have any student debt when they get out of there because that's the trend of the marketplace going forward. So we're really starting to see that paradigm shift, because what's happening is onboarding efficiencies now. If I'm a manufacturer and I have a bunch of openings that cost me $40,000 a year in terms of net salary and 30% anticipatory benefits, right? It costs me about $80,000 when I reassess my financials at the end of the year. It's going to cost me about $80,000 a person based on trends and data now to get that person in the door and retain them, right? So, and we're dealing with more high risk as the population dwindles. So they're really using that high school market or K-12 market and tech college, that programming aspect to achieve a lot of their goals right now.
What about the adult apprenticeship programs? I mean, are people earning as – how does it work? Are they earning as they learn, or
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that.
Yep.
So in registered apprenticeship in Wisconsin, about 90% of the learning is happening on the job, being mentored by a skilled worker already in that trade. That remaining 10% of a student's time is spent in the classroom. When I say classroom, I want to be really clear that it's not the classroom that you and I might envision from the past, though. Apprenticeship instruction is really evolving, and it's becoming more hands-on, which makes the technical college system a perfect partner in apprenticeship. We have the labs. We have the skilled faculty to provide that training. And so apprentices are doing some lecture-based learning in the apprenticeship classroom, but they're also doing hands-on activities, much like they would be doing on their work site. And so apprenticeship is a great strategy for those hands-on learners, folks who don't necessarily want to be lectured at all day. They want to get in there and solve problems. They want to think critically. They want to figure out either why something works or why it doesn't and how they can make that work. It's an entirely different way to learn, but a very effective strategy for a lot of folks.
Okay. What about in the Northwoods? Do you have similar programs? Yes. You have similar kinds of apprenticeship partnerships up there as well. Yes.
Yes. And in the Northwoods, in Nicolet's district, we primarily focus on the construction trades. And that, as you mentioned earlier, demand for new construction is outpacing the contractor's ability to deliver on projects. And so it's becoming just an increasingly challenging situation. And apprenticeship can really help solve those challenges. And the biggest aspect that I would say that makes a successful apprenticeship program is having that employer really be involved. And so they hire the apprentice, and they are taking some risk in that because they're hiring someone that doesn't have the full set of skills, and they're committing to them generally for several years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, while that apprentice is enrolled in educational programming, but the primary skill building is happening on the job. And so it is a large investment for employers to take on an apprentice, but the ones that have embraced the concept are seeing just a huge payoff down the road. You have loyal employees, those that really have learned from the ground up your business's culture and practices and philosophies. And it is really, we use that term win-win probably way too much, but it just is a huge benefit to not only the apprentice, but the employer as well. And I think that's the challenge. Many small employers think they can't take on an apprentice. They, you know, don't have the ability to mentor them, or it is a cost, it is an investment in that person. Yet when you start seeing the benefits of a long-term relationship mm-hmm. with that person, I mean, that's really where the benefit comes from. So that's up north, I think, in the construction trades, getting the employers to see the value and then understand that apprenticeship isn't uniquely a union concept. Labor unions have been involved, obviously, in skilled trades apprenticeships since the beginning, and Wisconsin has had a rich history in apprenticeship training. Yet it's not only the union employees that are covered by apprenticeship training. And so that's another educational aspect that any employer can get involved in apprenticeship. And if an apprenticeship program doesn't exist already for a particular trade, like we have for machinists and welders and carpenters and electricians, and the list of, I think it's probably more than 100 different trades that are covered by apprenticeship, if there's a trade or an employer that's out there listening saying, well, they don't do apprenticeship in my industry, all you need to do is contact either, you know, the Workforce Board or any of the tech colleges, and we can get you connected to the Bureau of Apprenticeship at the state, and we can build customized apprenticeship programs. And so the main message, I think, for this whole apprenticeship conversation is this is a partnership and things are different than they used to be. And we've become a lot more flexible and responsive to the workforce needs. So I would say check it out.
Can you take me through it, the process? Let's say my son, for example, would like to become an electrician. What does he do? What's the process like?
Yeah. So depending on what trade someone wants to enter, their process is going to look a little bit differently. If we look at an electrician, that's a construction trade apprenticeship. So construction trade programs are governed by what are called joint apprenticeship committees. Those are committees that are made up of contractors in the trade as well as employees who work in that trade, equal representation from both of those parties. Folks actually apply, both employers and apprentices apply to those committees to be approved to enter into an apprenticeship. Now, once they are approved, they enter into a contract, and the signatories to that contract are the apprentice, the sponsor, which would be either an employer or that committee, as well as the State Bureau of Apprenticeship Standards. Now, every joint apprenticeship committee operates just a little bit differently. They will have perhaps some testing that an individual might have to complete. They might have to complete an Accuplacer test, which is the technical college system entrance test. There's a test called a TABE test. There are various tests that the committees may use to determine individuals' eligibility to enter their program. Also, apprenticeship committees have different methods for allowing folks in. Some will use a ranked listing of applicants. They'll rank them in orders of score. That's really common in the union side of the house. So the folks who have the highest scores will be the first folks who are called when there's a job opening within a member business. Some other apprenticeship committees will operate using a letter of introduction. What that means is that the individual takes any required tests, they fill out required applications, they meet with the committee interviews them, and as long as all their minimum test scores and eligibility criteria are met, they offer them it's called a letter of introduction. It really serves as a pre-approval letter. That individual can then use that letter as they're going out and looking for work in the field to show that they've met those eligibility requirements. The employer doesn't have to take a risk on them in knowing that they'd be eligible to come into the program. So there are some things in the construction trades that folks can do before they're employed. In apprenticeship, you do have to be employed by a willing sponsor, but in the construction trades, you can do some of those things beforehand. Also, at technical college, there are colleges and or high schools, there may be some coursework that folks can take in preparation, either through a dual credit arrangement with a high school or even taking courses directly at the technical college. I know at Mid-State Technical College, we offer a 12-credit program called the Construction Trades Technical Diploma. It's comprised of 6 courses. All of our apprenticeship committees... Actually, I take that back. We have just added one that we have to follow up with. But so far, aside from that, all of our apprenticeship committees have agreed to accept all of the courses that make up that program towards the apprenticeship requirements. So there are some things that can be done in preparation. My recommendation to any student who's interested in pursuing that is to reach out to their high school counselor, their CTE coordinator at their high school, and their technical college apprenticeship contact.
What about adults who are looking to get into it? I mean, what should they do? Contact the schools directly or?
Go ahead.
I would say contact either of the 3 tech colleges in our area, because they all have, like Manny said, Manny works in that space. So they all have an apprenticeship rep that can walk you through the guidelines relative to what industry you want to go into.
Okay. I know that, Derek, your organization has some specific training programs as well. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Well, it depends on the year, right? Mm-hmm. So our program is really designed to work with underserved populations. So anybody 18 or over that's unemployed, right, or has a barrier to employment, whether it be socioeconomic or disability or maybe they made a mistake in their past life, things like that. Otherwise designed to work with people who don't make a livable wage. So if anybody's having trouble finding people and listening to this, 1285 is a livable wage metric. It's going to be 1301 next year. So that's for somebody single, living paycheck to paycheck, what they need to not qualify for state assistance. So if you're not above that, there's probably a reason why you have a problem finding talent. So working with those to shift those demographics, or anybody from a dislocation, right, that recently gets laid off. A lot of our programs are designed to do case management, counseling, support services, and then direct them to one of our three technical colleges in the area based on what they want to go for in an in-demand field. So they can choose anything in any of our primary economic sectors as long as it's offered at a tech college and it's in an in-demand field. And we essentially subsidize that and subsidize some support, not only through through co-enrollments with other groups from DWD. And then the other thing that we have the ability to do, which we talked about before, before we went on the air, was we put together a lot of short-term training programs with our tech colleges, actually, Nicolet, Mid-State, and NTC. So we'll fund short-term trainings for special population groups, build a recruitment plan, and then we allow business and industry to have a voice to actually make the curriculum with the tech college, and then we're the biller of record and pay the cost and provide the support services to get people out faster. And the cool part about doing those types of things is they range anywhere from usually 12 to 14 weeks on a course, but it's a bunch of businesses coming together saying we all have the same common need. Here's what we need to do to get them here. Tech college provides the instruction, but on the back end, this kind of ladders into apprenticeship or succession planning. That person now has a boatload of credits too, as well.
Okay.
So kind of recession proof themselves, because they're going into an in-demand field with some skill versus being unskilled in the marketplace. And that's something we've done. But now they can go to any of our tech colleges now if they want to go back, or they can transfer into a multitude of fields, or they could ladder into apprenticeship, which also ladders into a multitude of fields. So we're continually building credits so they have an educational buffer. So we do stuff like that all the time.
I know that Nicolet is working with the Department of Corrections, McNaughton Correctional Center, to train inmates for in-demand jobs. Sandy, can you talk a little bit about that?
I certainly can. This is a really exciting program that Nicolet has undertaken with the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, and we're focusing on those people who are nearing their reentry back into their communities and looking at job training programs that can reduce the rate of recidivism. I always have trouble with that word.
I do too.
And this has been really great because we have a state correctional facility in our district, minimum security, called McNaughton Correctional Facility, and we have done job training programs with them for many years. And so this was a natural partnership. And what the Department of Corrections does is they canvass all of the state prisons and recruit students, inmates, who are interested in getting into a skilled trade program and getting a certificate or a technical diploma. It's usually about a 14-week training program, full-time, on campus. And so we've had people both at McNaughton Correctional Facility and those that have been transferred to that facility just to take advantage of our program. And then they are transported to Nicolet's campus and take this intensive skilled training program with lots of support services, student services, some of our academic success preparation. We've done some really innovative things with integrating basic math and reading and study skills right into their technical program courses, and we've been extremely successful. So we've done three cohorts, two in the mechanical maintenance area, one in welding, and there is continued interest in this partnership from the state, and so we're happy to work with them.
All right. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Mandy Mayock, Sandy Bishop, and Derek Heikkinen. Our executive producer today is Rick Ryer. Today's show is produced by Joy Ratchkramer, who is also our on-air producer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll welcome Art Stevenson, Jerry Schmidt, and Larry Big Red Norofsky to the show for a discussion and live performance featuring some of country music's most influential songs. Until then, we're heading out of town.